May it please the Court, my name is Tom Mikrit, representing the defendant appellant David England. Mr. England's 210-month sentence must be vacated for two reasons. First, the District Court failed to follow this Court's holding in England 2 when it sentenced Mr. England to the same 210-month sentence that was vacated by this Court due to a due process violation. And second, Mr. England's sentence is substantively unreasonable.
So on the first of those points, though, nothing in our order told the District Court judge that 210 months was off the table. I mean, this is, you know, as you know, we've been living with this case, as have you, for some time. And we have understood that given the guidelines at the time of the sentencing, the guideline sentence was 2A2.1. You know, it was calculated with reference to that. And, I mean, the idea has always been, would a reasonable sentence have to be below that guideline because of all of the things that we've gone over so exhaustively, the fact that this was just threats and words and the fact that 2J winds up getting correctly put in, 2J1.2 is a cross-reference later. So the district judge this time, you know, confesses error, says, I never should have made those remarks about the likelihood that he'll go out and offend again. And, you know, Mr. England is his own worst enemy. You read through this long allocution that he gives at the resentencing, and I had the feeling that with every word that came out of his mouth, the district judge was more convinced that a significant sentence was necessary for him.
Well, two things, Your Honor. First, the court in England 2 did not state that 210 was off the table. But what the court's opinion stated was that if further evidence was adduced to support the district court's improper finding, the district court could rely on that. But what the district court did was it merely removed the offensive language from its ruling and sentenced him to the same sentence as if it was a harmless error, the due process violation, which this court did not find.
Yeah, I mean, he says, well, I never should have said that. I'm disregarding it. I'm, you know, putting it out of my mind. Whether we believe him or not, I guess he does say that that's what he's doing. What's your strongest argument for looking at this resentencing and concluding that 210 months is, as a matter of law, unreasonably high?
Well, to begin, Your Honor, the 210-month sentence comes from an error in the guidelines. The district court has continually based a sentence based on the 2A2.1 guideline.
Right, and I actually kind of liked your argument that at least, it reminds me of a bursting bubble presumption, that at least in this instance, you may have rebutted any presumption of reasonableness that the guideline sentence has, and we're back to neutrality at this point. It's not reasonable, it's not unreasonable, it's just there. But even so, these are deferential standards of review.
Correct, Your Honor. They are deferential. But if you look at Mr. England's conduct here, and especially the threats that were made under count 4, which is what gives us 2A2.1, the mistake in the guidelines.
And Mr. England's complete inability somehow to accept responsibility for what he's done, at least if you listen to his allocution.
Well, in his allocution, Your Honor, he actually did come forward and stated that he did possess the weapon and that he did make the threat. But then
he's contesting all sorts of other things, like, you know, he was justified in attacking someone who was in his home, and it wasn't really the gun he broke the car window with, it was a hammer. I mean, he says all sorts of things.
Yeah, and Mr. England is, to put it quite frank, is all bark and no bite. And that shows in the threat convictions. His family has continually testified that they didn't take these threats seriously because they know him. Mr. Bull, the intended target of the threat, testified that Mr. England was just blowing off steam, that no one in his family took these threats seriously, and he never felt threatened by Mr. England at all. He also was under the impression he was in the witness protection program because of these threats, and in open court he has to be taken off of them because, in his words, it was ridiculous. Mr. England's father, the intended conduit of the threat, although Mr. England's father never actually conveyed the threat to Mr. Bull, testified he thought the threats were just a bunch of wind and that no one in his family was fearing his son. Mr. England is like the defendant in the Kirkpatrick case, which we have provided a supplemental authority to the court.
I can see these as arguments for a district judge, but I'm just trying to imagine, suppose you were in our shoes and you had to sit down and write an opinion explaining to Judge Reinhart what he's done wrong at this point. What do you say?
The district court has not provided sufficient reasons to support such a lengthy sentence, more than double the range what the Sentencing Commission believes is appropriate for Mr. England's conduct.
Which assumes, I think, contrary to our earlier opinions, that the correct starting point should have been the 2J1.2 starting point.
No, under the guidelines, as they are under the 2005 version of the guidelines, the district court has to apply 2A2.1. Has to. And it has to find that range. But because this is a unique case in which the Sentencing Commission has found that there's an error in the guidelines right after this court's opinion in England 1, which called it a pernicious Scrivener's error in the statutory index, that's what makes this case different. That's
your hook for saying there's no longer a presumption of reasonableness for the guideline computed with reference to 2A2.1, and so looking at the picture as a whole, 2J1.2 has to be regarded as well as a potential sentence, and you need some, you still need to come up with some reason why 210 is not an acceptable sentence. It's well within the statutory boundaries, right?
It is well within the statutory boundaries. Correct, Your Honor.
Well, what do you think the judge should have done?
The judge?
He approached the question, yeah. So you have what? You have a gun charge and obstruction of justice. Is that it, basically?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So what should he have done?
The judge should have recognized that 2J1.2 is what the sentence...
All right, I know. So what should he have done?
We believe Mr. England should be sentenced within the range provided by the Sentencing Commission now, within the range of...
The new one, the 2J1.2.
92 to 115 months.
And that 92 to 152 is for what? Is that just for the obstruction, or is that... The gun plus the obstruction?
That is for everything, Your Honor, and that's what the district court...
For everything. I don't understand. You don't have a guideline for everything.
Sorry. What the district court found is for the 92 to 115-month range, that was Mr. England's total offense conduct level.
Well, now you've lost me. So the first step would be what? To compute the gun sentence and then add on the obstruction or what?
Well, Mr. England was convicted of the obstruction count. And how the guidelines work is that if the gun charge and the obstruction count in count 4 were the same offense level, so there should have been a two-level enhancement on top of the gun charge to have a total offense level of 24, which yields the...
That's how the guidelines just deal with multiple counts, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Why do you say two levels on top of the... gun? Why not two levels on top of the obstruction? I mean, I know it's the same.
It was how they got. I believe it's
F. And that range would be what? 92 to
115 months.
To 115.
Yes.
Now the judge was aware of this, wasn't he?
The judge was aware of that of this.
But so he added on 105 months.
I believe it's
95. Is that what he did, basically?
Yes, he added on basically 95 months on top of what the commission believes is appropriate for Mr. England's conduct.
Mr. Rivera, I just want to follow up on that, what Judge Posner was making the inquiry of you. Is there anything in the June hearing, where you were there, June 09, that wasn't brought to the judge's attention? I appreciate your argument on what ought to have been reasonable. Is there any hint that Judge Reinhart misread your argument or misread the direction from this court? How do we get behind his assessment of these witnesses and say that he failed to accept the argument you make that he's more bark than bite? He's pretty strong in his personal read of the defendant, is he not?
Yes, he is. He is very strong in his read of Mr. England.
It seems to jump off the record. And what are the building blocks to the unreasonableness that you suggest he has arrived at in the sentencing? We might disagree with him, but, you know, obviously our review limitations.
It's the strict adherence to a guideline range that is a mistake. A 210 to 262 month.
But he's aware of that, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
I understand.
Yeah. But the district court, when it levied its sentence again, has stated, well, this is the low end of the guideline range. But it's the low end of the wrong guideline range. And if you look at Mr. England's conduct, these threats, yes, there are threats, but they need to be treated as threats. The district court is still sentencing him as if he would have gone further with these threats and actually tried to murder a witness, when the record simply doesn't support that conclusion at all, as the court found in England, too.
That's my point. It doesn't support it from the testimony of the family member.
Correct, Your Honor.
Are you saying that Judge Reinhardt couldn't find any basis for him to arrive at that potential threat being greater than how it's discounted by family or whoever testified?
I don't believe there's anything in the record to support that conclusion, Your Honor. I see that my time is up.
What is the statutory maximum for the gun and the obstruction of justice charges?
It is a total of 40 years, 10 years for each offense.
No. I don't want to combine them. What is the statutory maximum for the gun offense?
10 years, Your Honor.
And what is it for the obstruction of justice?
10 years, Your Honor.
And could a judge give a consecutive sentence, couldn't he?
Correct, Your Honor.
So he could give 20 years, which would be 240 months.
Correct, Your Honor.
But there were three obstruction counts.
There were three obstruction counts.
So that's how you got up. If you made everything consecutive, it could have gone up to 40.
To 40 years, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Mallory?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Monica Mallory for the United States. I'd like to start with pointing out something that I think is critical, and that's where in the record you can find the awareness the district court judge had that he needed in this unique case to consider the effect of the 2J guideline. And if you would refer back to in the initial sentencing before we even found that we discovered the error in the guideline and determined it to be a Scrivener's error, Defendant's Appellate Appendix 51. In the later resentencing, Defendant's Appellate 107, Appendix 107, and Defendant's Appendix 232. Essentially, in all those places, the district court said on the record that he recognized the problem with the guideline requirement to apply 2A2.1 to this offense.
So let me start with a bit of a counterfactual, Ms. Mallory, but I think it really captures what my own discomfort is with this. You're right. I mean, the district judge has known about 2J1.2 for a long time, and, of course, things have happened with the Sentencing Commission since then. But if this sentencing had taken place after the commission adds that as a reference, the district court judges are obliged to look at the best reference that's there, and I think it's pretty clear that would have been 2J1.2. And so if the ceiling was 115 months and the judge is contemplating a 210-month sentence under cases like Gall, it's not that the Supreme Court rules that out if it's within a statutory maximum, but the Supreme Court has said you need a darn good explanation if you are going to have such a great deviation from the guidelines range. And so I'm looking at it that way. I mean, yes, does the judge have the raw power under all the right 3553A circumstances? Perhaps yes, but I don't see any acknowledgement by the judge that in many ways, this is close to a doubling of the sentence. And when that happens in other circumstances, we really want to see, you know, what about this person has justified doubling?
That's correct, Your Honor, and you are entitled to see that in such a
and
significant
And he doesn't
increase.
Tell us. He doesn't see it as doubling. He keeps saying, well, I'm supposed to use the guidelines as they existed at the time of the sentencing, true enough in a way, but as we all recognize, this case is not your usual case.
That's true. He may not have used the term doubling, but I think in every one of those instances that I've just...
A very strange coincidence, wouldn't it be that if he started with a 92 to 115 range, he ends up with 210? I mean, it sounds as if he's sort of anchored on the 210.
I don't agree that he's anchored on it. Well, I realize that he would
like
have
it's such
to.
A strange coincidence, right, that you that starting with 92 to 115, you just happen to add on 95 months. How did you get to 95 months?
If he had, for example, let's assume he's approaching it from today, where the guidelines are, and he has the option of 2J and 2A. He has to look at those, make sure which one applies to the conduct of the defendant.
And there's no question it would be 2J. This
let's
man
assume,
is just talking. It's right. threats.
Right. Let's assume he uses 2J, and then he sees what he's seen from his experience with this defendant. He wants to depart or vary upward. He would have to look at the 2A guideline and figure out and explain on the record why he thinks this defendant should depart, be varied upward
and
that
that's
far.
And that's what he doesn't do. The government gives up on the idea of trying to introduce evidence that the judge is concerned that Mr. England might go out and really do something violent was well-founded. Everybody just puts that to one side and says, "We're, you know, you didn't introduce any new evidence, you didn't do anything, so we have no record to support a 2A approach to this."
I disagree slightly with what you're saying. What we chose not to do was introduce evidence that had he been released on bond,
right,
he would have attempted murder. I don't think that that was necessary. We had enough in the record about this defendant.
What's the enough?
All of the proceedings before this judge, the record.
No, but
that
the details is what.
The details are his criminal history, his conduct.
All these things he used to say about, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you know, holding his gun up. Although your opponents make the argument that there are no fact findings by the district court on a lot of these things.
That is incorrect. The district court, in I believe the first sentencing, and referenced it in the later two sentencing, pointed to the trial record, which is where it was established that he used the gun the way he used it in the offense, which was not an enhancement, was an aggravating factor.
What's about all this is he gave him 210 months on the theory that he was really an attempted murderer. And we said very emphatically no. Well, came out later to show that although he's not an attempted murderer, he's as bad as an attempted murderer?
Nothing new, but you should.
Nothing new. Well, and but you'd think that if he's not, the judge is straightened out and he's told not attempted murder, then you'd think he'd give a lighter sentence unless the government came up with additional information because he was going to be, you know, we ordered resentencing. So the government could come up and said, yeah, look, he's not attempted murder, but there's all this other stuff.
Unless the court took issue with the fact that he actually considered his comment about him being more like an attempted murder when he fashioned the sentence in that.
Well, no, I don't know what you're saying. What?
The district court said during this last sentencing that he did not take into consideration the comment that
he made.
Okay,
so what is it that he took into consideration that turned out to be as serious as his mistaken belief that the person was the equivalent of attempted murderer?
The offense conduct and all of the conduct that went with it.
But that was all. That was all there before.
He has.
But then why didn't he give him a higher sentence before? I don't understand. If you take out attempted murder, why doesn't that have to lead to a lighter sentence?
As the district court is expressing to you, and he has in this recent opinion, in this recent finding, that he did not rely on that conclusion.
But then where did he get to the 210 months?
Based on all of the information.
But then why didn't he give him more than 210 months the first time?
He's relying on the same information. He believes the sentence.
Don't you see what Judge Posner is saying?
He
should have been, if he really was an attempted murderer based on sentencing number two, then maybe it should have been 300 months. Maybe it should have been more. You take away attempted murder, which is an extremely terrible thing to do, and there ought to be some visible adjustment. And I actually have to beg to differ with you. I mean, the fact that all sorts of evidence comes in at the trial is not the same thing as the district court judge crystallizing that evidence and saying, here are the findings of fact I am making from that evidence. We have a jury verdict. It's a criminal case. We just have a jury verdict of conviction. It doesn't mean the jury necessarily believed or disbelieved every word that came out of everyone's mouth.
I agree, Your Honor, but he did not say that just the trial evidence supports me. In his sentencing
but
findings.
But he didn't tell us why is this man's behavior as bad as an attempted murderer's, even though he's not an attempted murderer.
Right,
we don't know that.
He did not sentence him in the last resentencing before this recent one to 210 months because he concluded he was like an attempted murderer.
He has to have, because that was the attempted murder guideline.
He sentenced him based on his conduct.
There's a logical fallacy here. I mean, suppose that you give a you give him an extra 95 months because he's an attempted murderer and because he's obnoxious and unrepentant and nuts or something like that. Okay, two factors that lead you to the 95 months. Then the Court of Appeals takes away one of them, takes away the attempted murder. Then something has to be put in its place, something new that comes out in the resentencing in order to balance the loss of the attempted murder as a factor increasing the sentence. Isn't that right?
If he had relied on
right?
That would
correct?
Be correct if he had
okay,
relied.
Okay, so what is it that, what was added, that what came out in the resentencing that was as bad as the attempted murder which had been subtracted by us?
The judge clarified that he did not rely on a conclusion that the
defendant... No, what new came in, right? In the old days, he relied on the attempted murder. He was express about that. Now that's taken away from him. So something must replace that to justify the 95-month add-on. And what replaced that? What new came in?
What replaced that was the judge's findings, which he had already previously made, that this defendant's threatening behavior...
That he had not previously made?
Previously also
made. But if it were, is there a new finding by the judge that wasn't in the original sentence? A new finding?
Well, I believe because we've sort of explored the issues about whether or not the defendant's statements were just braggadocio or they were real and threatening, the judge expanded upon those findings and pointed out that...
Well, he must have thought they were real the first time to make him think him an attempted murderer.
And that they went beyond what the victim family felt.
Yes, I know, but that was all from the first. What happened at the resentencing to add to take the place of the attempted murder?
All I can
nothing, say. Right? Nothing happened.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing except.
So he reinstates the same sentence after a major prop is removed by the Court of Appeals.
He reinstated the same sentence by explaining to this court that he did not rely on this conclusion that the defendant was more like an attempted murder.
But you're not tracking. Look, The first time he relied on the fact he's an attempted murderer.
For the sentence? No.
The first time?
He says in this record that he did not. And I have to take him at his word for that. He says then and now, I do not rely on any findings.
Well, that's the improper comment. That's his statement. It was an improper comment, not a finding.
Right. And that I did not rely on it. And I have to take him at that. That is what he said. That's his express statement.
Because we called it a finding in our opinion.
You called it a finding.
So we were wrong.
He did not say it's not a finding. He's saying he did not rely on it in establishing the sentence that he awarded this defendant. And that is a second step, if you will. And remember, during that middle resentencing, what you needed him to do was to explain to you why this defendant's sentence was not in, did not violate 3553A6, was not unfair in relation to other defendants. And there is where he was trying
to... Do you really believe that? Because, of course, it's the attempted murder that connects it to the 2A, right? But isn't the logic of it and the reason we called it a finding that was the basis for his sentence? The fact that because it was attempted murder, it fit in very nicely with the guideline.
That may have been your opinion. I agree, but that's he's trying to explain to this court in his findings now that is not what he was doing. He was answering the question you posed in that middle resentencing, which was, why did this sentence not violate 3553A6?
Ms. Mallory, what is the applicable, guideline range in this case?
For under the old guideline?
No, now. At the time of sentencing in June. What was this?
We must use the old guideline. So it's 2A, 2.1, and that is a 210 to 262 range. I want to clarify for the record the statutory range. There are four counts, 10 each, so it's 40. Although now the statute, the fourth count statute, which is the 1512 threat, has an increased statutory range, but then it was 10
for
each.
It's 210 to 262.
Yes, sir. And he's at the low end of that. And that movement was made in the middle resentencing and has remained the same.
Did the government recommend a sentence?
We recommended that he stay within the range that he had previously established.
You recommend a sentence?
At this resentencing, we did not recommend.
What about the original sentencing?
Oh, boy. You're asking me to think back. I think we were struggling with the 2J, and I know that we recommended that he apply the 2A guideline, and if he decided that 2J was more applicable, depart upward. And that's how we styled it. And I can't remember if I gave a number, to be honest with you, at this point.
But the resentencing, you didn't give a number.
Not a new number.
Did you ask him to reinstate his previous sentence?
Yeah. We thought that his findings supported his choice of 210.
Do you think 210 months is an appropriate sentence?
Based on my observation in this case, and I understand, it's a significant sentence.
Of course, you know, as I understand it, maybe quite wrong about it, but that if you didn't have the... if he just had the gun offense and no obstruction of justice, he would have had a 41-month sentence.
Yes.
Right.
Well, without a trial and testimony, yes.
So he gets 210 months. That means he got 169 months for obstruction of justice.
A significant obstruction, yes. Three counts.
Yeah, but look. 169 months is 14 years.
It is.
14 years for obstruction of justice?
Three counts, where we selected the three counts after numerous threats, yes.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Mallory. And Mr. Rickroot, do you have any? You have more time. Well, do you have anything further? Yes, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you. Page 38 of the appellate, I guess Appendix 49, I'm just going to read you from the June couple of lines. And I want you to tell us how I want to go
what
back.
What page, Joe?
It's on page 49 of the appendix.
Okay.
And I want to go back to something Judge Wood asked you, or I think asked you, about how one gets behind what the judge has done in this case. And he says, and I know this is a global statement, but he says, I've considered the statement of all the lawyers, this is the bottom of the page, and the defendant at the resentencing. I've considered the two opinions of the Court of Appeals, and of course I've considered the Section 3553A. He continues, now the applicable guideline range for this his conviction is 210 to 262 months based on a total offense level of 33 and a criminal history of 1. And then I want to stop right there. Now, tell me where in his general statements, I call it a global statement, he has not followed our mandate. And you heard Ms. Mallory make the defense of the judge. How do we? Is he in error in anything there he has said, or is he mischaracterized anything?
In that section, the district court was merely stating what he looked at, and he stated he looked at the Court of Appeals, both opinions from this case.
Right.
However, if reading down further on the page, he says he's proceeding without consideration on reliance, and then he gives him the same 210-month sentence. What this court stated in England 2 was very explicit. There is no doubt that the district court relied on its improper finding that had Mr. England been out on bond, he would have attempted to murder a witness.
Yeah, but what do we do with Ms. Mallory's comment that the judge has now said that wasn't the starting point?
That 2A2.1.
The attempted murder position is not the starting point.
Well, the record simply doesn't support that. The district court has continually defended
it. That's right in the earlier one. Now he's saying that's not my position.
Well, it is still his position, Your Honor, as he...
I understand as the outcome.
Yeah. But even how he got... he has defended the sentence based on the reference to 2A2.1, the attempted murder guideline. He's still treating Mr. England as if he followed through on these threats and attempted to murder a witness.
So you're in a sense saying there's just a contradiction. He's looking still at 2A2.1. And then, though, the sentence that Ms. Mallory's relying on, lines 18 to 20 of page appendix 50, he says, further, those statements, meaning the right. He's going to go out and kill, had no influence on my ultimate decision of imprisonment imposed then or now. So he's trying to say, maybe I said that, but I wasn't really relying on it. So you are just seeing a contradiction, in a sense, between that statement of his and the fact that he still is using the attempted murder guideline.
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay.
What does the judge mean? I had looked at this before. Page 50 of the appendix, the top, after the first sentence. It says that the second sentence, the total offense level is based on the guideline range in effect at the time of the sentencing and is the law of the case through two court of appeals decisions. What does that mean?
I believe, Your Honor.
Isn't the 33, the total offense level 33, isn't that derived from that 2A?
Yes, it is.
So what does he mean by law of the case? I don't get that.
I don't understand either, Your Honor.
I thought all he meant was that we had said, given the way the guidelines stood at the time of sentencing, that the only reference out there was the 2A reference, and he did not err by looking at it. We certainly never said that's where 3553A left you under all of these.
That may be correct, Your Honor.
Could we have the possibility of a judge here who made his reasoning and spoke in terms of the attempted murder, and then uses the same reasoning on the threat later on? Is that basically what you're saying?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow.
Do we have a judge who's using the reasoning that led him to think in terms of an attempted murder, and now uses the same reasoning and labels it threat? And could he do that?
Well, perhaps he's trying to use the same reasoning, and he used those statements before, these threats, to get him to the attempted murder finding before, and the court found that there wasn't sufficient evidence for that, so it's likely, and I don't know if the record is clear on that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. McGregor. And you were appointed, were you not?
Correct, Your Honor.
So we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mrs. Mallory as well. And the court will be in recess until 2:30 this afternoon.